interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 641. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. Because no one else is going to do it for you. On and on. It's been going the way you've been told, behind the woodshed. I'm going to do another PSA, BTW PSA for y'all. In particular, potentially for only, those jab compromise. But not so. Anybody compromise. Their health is what we're talking about here. But it just seems to me too interesting. When they told us we got to wash our hands and sterilize our hands because of the great COVID sweat. These may not be soaps you want to fend off infection. Dermarite Industries has pulled a series of hand products due to risks of life-threatening sepsis. Dermarite Industries has recalled its DermaClean antiseptic lotion soap, Dermasara analgesic and clean foam antimicrobial foam soap, and Paragean antiseptic cleanser. Thanks to a group of bacteria known as Burkholderia sepacea complex, which can be antibiotic resistant per the CDC. In healthy individuals with minor skin lesions, the use of the products will be more likely to result in local infections, whereas in immunocompromised individuals, the infection is more likely to spread into the bloodstream, leading to life-threatening sepsis, the FDA says in a notice on its recall. So far, Dermarite hasn't received any reports of adverse events linked to the news. How did they find that out, though? People affected by the bacteria could have zero symptoms at all, just like the great COVID swindle. Or they could end up with a fever, fatigue, and serious respiratory infections, according to the CDC. Fever, fatigue, serious respiratory infection sounds like what the jab gave people, doesn't it? People in a healthcare settings, as well as the immunocompromised, and those with chronic lung disease, including cystic fibrosis, are most at risk. So everybody that got the jab is immunocompromised, aren't they? Read the stories. Partly why I read the stories, to keep us apprised of how long-term this thing is going to be and is for people that got jabbed. And then we have the shed problem for those that weren't. That it seems they may have been moved on this binary bioweapon a little too quickly, maybe, you think? Dermarite says anyone with affected products in their home should immediately examine available inventory and destroy all affected products in accordance with each facility's process. Not sure of the process? Well, you can go ahead and get the link over at the Blogcaster. Or look it up yourself as we're going through this. You'll see it at episode 641. You can read the rest on how to go about doing that. And you find it interesting how correlated all that is. And we have immunocompromised people. That's what the mRNA technology attacked. And then they told us to clean our hands. And so now we have that attacking us as well. This next article, I think, is a progress report from Kanukistan. Canada admits staggering number of countries' deaths last year were assisted suicide. Medically assisted suicide in Canada reached a record high in 2023, according to a report from the United States neighbor in the north. Government data from Canada found that 2023 medically assisted suicides in the country soared to every one in 20. Accounting for 15,343, or 4.7% of the deaths last year. That marks about a 16% spike from the year before. Spike. When I told you about what was going to happen with this euthanasia law up there, that's what it's made for. It's the future that they want. Health Canada describes MAID as the health service that allows someone who is found to be eligible to receive assistance from a medical practitioner to end their life. The Grievous Medical Program uses poison, which is administered orally and intravenously, to end the participants' lives. So clearly, death is not health, so we can change the name to Death Canada and the Death Service. When MAID was first introduced to the populace, it was accessible only to adults whose natural death was reasonably foreseeable. Then, in 2021, according to Reuters, the country expanded the offering to those not only with terminal but incurable ailments and disabilities. And I predicted that would happen the way this ends up working, and here we are with the proof. The law is set, and that's not it, folks, there's more. The law is set to expand yet again on March 17th of 2027, when people suffering, quote, solely from a mental illness will become eligible to participate in the MAID program. The expansion was initially set to take effect this year, but lawmakers in Ottawa delayed the rollout. As to the sort of treatment to expect, 37-year-old woman, Catherine Mentler, said she went to a Vancouver General Hospital's Access and Assessment Center in June of 2023, recalling her goal was to keep myself safe because she was in crisis. During her examination, a hospital employee told Mentler there was no beds in the facility and asked her if she'd considered MAID. The woman who told the Christian Institute, quote, the clinician then went on to speak of her relief at the death of another patient struggling with mental illness, close quote. That made me feel like my life was worthless or a problem that could be solved if I chose MAID, said Mentler, later telling the Globe and Mail, quote, the more I think about the program, I think it brings up more and more ethical and moral questions around it. Please be in prayer for the Lord to intervene in the lives of those considering medical-assisted suicide. It is currently legal in 10 states south of the Kanuk-Estinian border, in Maine, New Jersey, Vermont, New Mexico, Montana, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, California, and Hawaii, and the district, Washington, D.C. Not a state. It's going to come up here in a little bit. Not a state. Pay attention to that. But there you have it. As we were talking about during the Great COVID Swindle, they're going after the older people, and that gets rid of what? The liability of their pension, so-called. We call it Social Security here in the States. Going after the Medicare, they're going to take all those that liability right on out, and they did. We may be headed toward a smartphone world, Mark Zuckerberg. Is it the only tech bigwig who sees a future in wearable AI devices? Now, my mind's tying a bunch of stuff together. I realize I haven't said it yet. The last few episodes, we've been talking about the little ones getting involved and now the mental health checks. I added a little bit more onto last episode, talking about those red flag laws, and you're all tied in. Now we're going to the subject matter of the bigwigs, the big tech. Billionaire buddies wanting to have their monitor equipment all over you all the time. I guess they'll inform you that you should go check in and ask for euthanasia, I suppose, at some point. And this is hot in the news in the United States, and Kennedy is pushing it. He wants everybody to be on wearable AI devices within 4 years. Artificial intelligence is advancing so quickly that some Silicon Valley bigwigs are betting it will lead to what might be unthinkable at the moment, a world in which people don't carry around smartphones. Instead, they might get their AI-powered know-how from their glasses or maybe a bracelet. And as I read that, I have to say I did not report on, and there's a bunch of other stories coming out about where these AI glasses are now turning up within the government. So understand this is not, I'm not going to go down that track this week, maybe ever, but this is now in the news with the nooseness to us, and they're priming the pump, if you will, your mental priming, being mentally primed to accept this, and for the purposes that they're going to help you out with. As Tim Hagee writes in the Wall Street Journal, one of the biggest advocates of this revolution is Meta's Mark Zuckerberg, who last week, quote, put a bullseye on the iPhone's role as gatekeeper in the digital world. And remember, this is just business for them. They want their market share. As we pointed out, they will take all this information they're getting, and it's monetizable. You are the product, as the title of last episode went, pointing that out more clearly. Every week it's been here, but more clearly. Zuckerberg issued what Higgins called a manifesto, which you can read in full via Silicon Valley Daily. He's pushing the term personal superintelligence to describe things. That's super error pronation, in my mind. And I'm doing that to tell you there's a tool. You find these words they're using that are promoting this cruelty that's coming on us. And you find a better word for you to remind yourself of what's really going on. And you call it that every time you see it. I would just call this super error, AI error pronation. You spell error with AI, RROR. And that's what you're looking at with this stuff. And so this personal intelligence becomes questionable really quickly. Is that the kind of intelligence you want for me? As I've said before, they're using the word intelligence now against what I've said. SMART is what they're talking. Smart devices. Smart ain't too intelligent. I've said this for years. Personal superintelligence that knows us deeply, understands our goals. You don't understand what understands means. I don't mean the legal fiction type stuff. That there's a consciousness that can figure out by pulling everything together your goals. Understands. That's not what AI does. And we have to get that understood real quickly. Because I'm trying to get people ahead of the game to be able to fully understand the list of things that they want to set up to say no. No, this thing does this, 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 and this, and I'm not going to submit myself to that. I'm not going to subject myself to that sort of deceit, deception. Personal superintelligence that knows us deeply, understands our goals, and can help us achieve them will be by far the most useful, he writes. Personal devices like glasses that understand our context because they can see what we see, hear what we hear, and interact with us throughout the day will become our primary computing devices. That sounds creepier than heck, folks. I don't know about you. And yeah, Zuckerberg has been wrong before. Just witness the metaverse. But Higgins points out he's not alone here. Amazon just bought the startup BEE, which offers an AI bracelet, and OpenAI's Sam Altman is teaming up with the legendary former Apple designer Joni Ive on some type of physical device to come. Meanwhile, Apple, quote, is seen as a surprising laggard in the field. And if you really believe Apple is a laggard, you're not paying attention. That little mind trick is to get you to believe that this technology is indispensable in your life. Apple is integrating in its core infrastructure with the Siberian Gulag first, to make it so easy and convenient to be super AI error prone. The ray of hope that for Zuckerberg is that you look geeky like him in his suckband surveillance glasses instead of using your corporate controlled phone. See, they're both losers. And while we're at it, maybe don't use ChatGPT for health advice. Man was likely advised that sodium bromide was an alternative to table salt. The lesson from a new medical case report, get your medical advice from doctors, not ChatGPT. Okay, interjection. I hope you all went right. Well, wait a minute. Why is the government going to AI-assisted healthcare? Right. Exactly. Perfect. The study published in the Annals of the Internal Medicine describes a 60-year-old man who developed bromism, a bromide toxicity, after turning to the AI chatbot for health information. The man told doctors he'd grown concerned about the negative effects of table salt or sodium chloride and asked the ChatGPT about eliminating it from his diet. The study authors didn't have access to the patient's chat records, but made a similar request to the chatbot and was told, quote, chloride can be swapped with bromide. Though likely for cleaning purposes, sodium bromide is often used for pool water disinfection. The case shows, quote, how the use of artificial intelligence can potentially contribute to the development of preventable adverse health outcomes, write the authors from the University of Washington in Seattle, warning AI chatbots, quote, generate scientific inaccuracies, lack the ability to critically discuss results, and ultimately fuel the spread of misinformation. Where have we heard all that before? Incorporated now in the infrastructure of the government that they denied to you, not the AI, that you were defining proper information. They were giving misinformation, and they continue, and that's the plan to do so. And getting back to this mental health issue, look at the theme through there, and how mission creep begins to happen, as I told you what happened for Kyrgyzstan and their MAID Act. Now mental health issues. And you see what's going on really young, what they're trying to get to, that young people can make their decisions, people that don't have capacity, people that are under 16, let's say, or 18 in some states, and 16 in others, that they can make contractual agreements. They're adult enough, if you will. They're insect enough to make these decisions on their own. For all that I reported that Illinois is saying that they can do mental health checks, and we heard that that's going to be based in a computer system. It's not just some little test we used to take on a piece of paper, 5 questions, and that's it. They look it over, and then they throw it in the trash. No, this is on your record forever, cradle to grave. Illinois is latest to balk at AI therapy horror stories. New law in Illinois targets unlicensed chatbot therapy marketing of services. And yet, what is the federal government doing? What are states doing? Illinois has enacted a new law barring the use of artificial intelligence in mental health therapy, making it the latest state of the to place restrictions on AI-powered chatbots in this space. The legislation, which took effect last week, prohibits licensed therapists from using AI to make treatment decisions or communicate with clients, though the technology can still be used for administrative purposes. The law also blocks companies from offering or advertising AI therapy services unless a licensed professional is involved. Illinois joins Nevada and Utah in scrutinizing AI's role in therapy, though those states' rules vary in strictness. The move follows growing concerns about the safety of AI chatbots as therapy tools, with accounts of chatbots giving risky advice to vulnerable users, as well as users unwittingly sharing private information in conversations that aren't always confidential. The same mental health and AI experts have welcomed the oversight, arguing that regulation is overdue in a field where technology remains unpredictable. But this is an oversight. This is banning it. Don't forget, Illinois just put in the kids are going to be going through tests. Who's doing the test? What created those questions? Who's analyzing the thousands and thousands and thousands of test results they get from all these little ones in their schools, in the public schools? Quote, we have already heard the horror stories when artificial intelligence pretends to be a licensed therapist. Can I just add everything else it pretends to be? Bob Morgan tells Mashable, with this new law, he adds, we are taking action to pause the unchecked expansion of AI in mental health care and putting necessary regulations in place before more harm is done. Well, it should be done for everything in your life, don't you think? So with all the AI government's relying on, and Illinois is now requiring mental health screenings for the little ones, and we've heard that the record can be faulty by AI. There's a couple reports I've reported on that in the past. How do you know? How do you know that licensed professional has the right record to analyze? Or has it relied on erroneous AI or is not bribed by either HARMA or interfered with by the insurance companies? Where's the guarantee it is AI-assisted and not just error-prone AI or some other self-conflicted tool deciding? Right, Tim? When do you find out the harm is done? And how are you going to fix it when the government captured disease management system for profit? Who are you going to call? Enforcement could be tricky. Questions remain about how authorities will define therapy services and whether AI companies might skirt the rules by adding disclaimers. Illinois' Financial Regulation Department will investigate complaints with violators facing fines up to $10,000. And when the violator is the state or its public-private henchman, what then? Yeah, who are you going to call when you're up against the ghost in the black box machine? Doge scores another court win. Judges allow review of Americans' data from Treasury education departments. The federal appeals court has ruled that teams from the Department of Government Efficiency can tap into sensitive databases at several federal agencies, reversing a previous block on their access. And I hope you can hear, and I have not seen exactly the perfect reason here behind all this. It was supposed to be for that digital infrastructure, the integration that's already gone and going through by one agency being able to look for efficiency. And they're tying the very same systems together within the federal system itself. The 2-1 decision Tuesday by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals permits DOGE to retrieve information from the Treasury and Education Department and the Office of Personnel Management. The clearance follows a similar Supreme Court action in June regarding Social Security data. The majority opinion authored by Judge Julius Richardson drew parallels that earlier case emphasizing the need for DOG analysis to do their work. DOGE's stated mission is to root out government waste, redundant contracts, and fraud. At the time, I told you that was probably the perfect thing to go in on, except there's lots of agencies that are supposed to be doing that already. However, this one's getting through, and this is what they claim to have been doing, even though we haven't seen its purpose come to actual fruition for everyone who thought it would take out all this waste and fraud and it would reduce the size of government. You saw that didn't work. Well, they caught a few things, but they didn't catch what everyone thought they might catch. And there's also a problem with what were they actually looking for and who's in control of that. But they have access to all this information, your finances and your health. But I don't know if you look through all your life. I don't know how much more critical those two areas can be, and they're all over it right now. The Justice Department maintained that safeguards were offered, promising security training and background checks to DOGE staff and restricting access to anonymized data where possible. Despite these measures, labor unions objected, arguing that DOGE's wide-ranging access could breach federal privacy laws. Judge Robert B. King, dissenting, raised alarms over the unprecedented and apparently unnecessary scope of DOGE's reach, noting that the unit's operation remain opaque. Boy, reach on X is kind of like nothing, isn't it? Funny they get their reach just by asking for it. Someone like myself don't. I wonder why that is. While federal judges initially tried to curb DOGE's authority, higher courts have generally sided with the government, granting DOGE significant freedom to review personal data, including financial records and student loan information for millions of Americans. So what's to stop the public and private partnership, big tech, from arguing it needs access when you are presumed a problem until you can prove you're not, like governments everywhere are doing with age verification or digital ID to protect the children? I really don't think people appreciate the nature of this threat. If people think about the sustainable threat by an overthrow limited form constitutional republic at all. And hot on the heels of Trump's defamation of the Intel CEO Lip-Bu-Tan and calling for his resignation, analysis, historic shift is happening with American capitalism. Trump's variant is labeled state capitalism with American characteristics. I really want to just stop right there, and I would hope everybody in the world would watch that, look at that, and say, wait a minute, that's not American. No, it's a whole new definition. It's a whole new intention. The Wall Street Journal analyst by Craig Ipp sees a pronounced, even historic shift happening under President Trump. Tell me why not. You haven't heard it from me, okay? Tell me if you haven't heard any of this before. Maybe not exactly stated this way, but the whole function of what's going on. I said there's a reorganization going on to further the future that they want. As recent as a generation ago, the thinking was that China's economy would begin to resemble America's more and more. Instead, capitalism in America is starting to look like China, he writes. Trump is exerting heavy influence from the White House to get businesses to align to his way of operating. This isn't socialism in which the state owns the means of production, writes Ipp. It is a more like state capitalism, a hybrid between socialism and capitalism in which the state guides the decisions of nominally private enterprises. Also, I find interesting, dances around, never gets to the word here. Can we just throw the words fascism out? Public-private is fascism. China, of course, goes much further with practice, and other nations, including Russia, Brazil, and even France, do so to lesser degrees. China describes its system as socialism with Chinese characteristics, and Ipp coins a similar phrase to describe what's happening in the U.S. Quote, so call this variant state capitalism with American characteristics, close quote, is still a sea change from the free market ethos the U.S. once embodied. So however it's sliced, public-private partnership or fascism, there's no free markets, no sound money, and digital exploitism on the horizon. I don't know how that's going to make America great again at all. Not one little bit. Again, confirming what I've been seeing is coming on us and slowly, incrementally working so much quicker anymore. And it's funny how people are agreeing with it. I'm just stunned. I'm always stunned. I don't know why I'm stunned. I shouldn't be stunned, but I'm stunned that people, a lot of people accept. I can't say everybody, but a lot of people accept it. And then on the other hand, those of us that won't, what do? How are we stopping that? I want to come up with a few suggestions for myself. And you attempt to not engage it as much as possible. Do not engage any of it. Do not have what they need you to have. Do not agree with the things they want you to do. Find all the, if you will, loopholes. Find the preservations. Again, they have to provide the cash. If you stop using cash, they don't have to provide it. So don't stop using cash. It makes it difficult. But the more of us that start to do that, makes it harder for them to bring the system in, the new system, the digital system in. Now, we found enough people in the world, great populations of people. In particular, we see it in the poor, that when you can't, the government can't. When you just can't, the government will try and supply it to you in order to push it forward. But if you still can't, they can't. Now, this is why we were talking last episode about Russia. The lawmaker in Russia says, you better start using cash. Don't rely on this digital system that we've got. Going to get maybe not so convenient real fast and a whole lot more expensive. As we see NVIDIA and AMD to pay 15% on China AI chip sales in a U.S. deal with Trump. As Trump dictates how these corporations are going to work. There is already no free market. Didn't bring it up. I'll bring it up here. Likely since there's been no sound money. It's all debt-based. There is no asset here. There's no actual property in it. It's not a private property. It's a governmental, quasi-governmental property in the medium that you're using. NVIDIA Corporation and Advanced Micro Devices Incorporated agreed to pay 15% of their revenues from Chinese AI chip sales to the U.S. government in a deal to secure export licenses. An unusual arrangement that may unnerve both U.S. companies and Beijing. I mean, I sit here, I'm stunned. I listened to that phrase right there, and I'm stunned. How this place is shifting is how fast. NVIDIA plans to share 15% of the revenue from sales of its H20 AI accelerator in China, according to a person familiar with the matter. The AMD will deliver the same share from M1308 revenues, the person added, asking for anonymity to discuss internal deliberations. The arrangements reflects the U.S. President Donald Trump's consistent effort to engineer a financial payout for America in return for concessions on trade. I just got to say, where is that America? Where is it defined? The United States, Washington, the government in Washington, D.C., the federal government, the federal part, not the municipal part, the federal part, that's the United States. The United States government, not America. His administration has shown a willingness to relax trade conditions like tariffs in return for giant investments in the United States, in the U.S., it says here. Not America. Have you received your dividend check? As with Apple Incorporated's pledge to spend $600 billion on domestic manufacturing, but listen to the distinction here, they're paying it as a cash payout. Apple is investing in manufacturing. That usually takes hardware. But such a narrow select export tax has little precedent in modern corporate history. Oh, yeah, that's right. But remember, the word tax in U.S. law, U.S. code, means extortion. It's wrongful extortion under the word exaction. And you can read that at 42 U.S.C. 1981. So when we see they're sharing this revenue, it's an extortion payment. Paying extortion to the government to do business, where tax means extortion. As I said, you can go read that for yourself in Title 42, USC, Section 1981. You know, squeeze this turnip as you might. Use the whitest lipstick applicator on this pig. But no free markets under Trump and no making America great again. You will comply, pay, or die. Quote, this seeming quid pro quo is unprecedented from an export control perspective. The arrangement risks invalidating the national security rationale for U.S. export controls, said Jacob Veldergeuze, a researcher at the D.C.-based Center for Security and Emerging Technology. It, quote, will likely undermine the U.S.'s position when negotiating with allies to implement complementary controls, he added. Allies may not believe U.S. policymakers if they are willing to trade away those capital national security concerns for economic concessions, either from U.S. companies or foreign governments. NVIDIA shares fell 1.5% in pre-market trading on Monday, and AMD shares declined about 3% before New York Exchange is opened. Remember, NVIDIA is the wealthiest corporation right now in the country. What about the lesser corporation? AI-powered radar can spy on phone calls from 10 feet, exposing new privacy risks. So as we go into this Siberian gulag, I've been reporting all these stories, pretty neat, interesting things to my mind, but look what they're using them for and who they're using them against. We now have AI-powered radar that can identify information from your phone. AI and radar combine to intercept phone calls remotely by decoding tiny vibrations from the phone's earpiece. Believe it or not, your phone's tiniest vibrations can reveal your conversations, thanks to AI. And so here's one thing I would say AI is detrimental for your health care. Once you get the algorithms on what the frequencies are and how to filter them out, the AI is a pattern recognition system. That's what it's made for. That's what it does. So this is something more scientific that it's applied to. Not something as subjective as your health. A team of computer science researchers at Penn State have developed a startling new way to eavesdrop on phone calls remotely by decoding subtle vibrations emitted by a cell phone's earpiece. Using millimeter wave radar combined with an AI speech recognition system, their setup can capture and transcribe conversation from up to 10 feet away with about 60% accuracy. This breakthrough raises significant privacy concerns about the potential misuse of such emerging technologies. Well, I'll just interject here. That's what they make it for. It's going to be misused. It's not misused from the people who are using it perspective, if you can understand that. They think it's just fine. They think this is what you have to do. It's national security. It's upholding the law. Law enforcement. The research builds on a 2020 project where the team achieved about 83% accuracy in recognizing 10 predefined words using a similar approach. The new work extends this capability to continuous speech transcription, though the accuracy is lower due to the complexity of decoding noisy radar data. Quote, when we talk on a cell phone, we tend to ignore the vibrations that come through the earpiece and cause the whole phone to vibrate, said first author Sirade Bazak, a doctoral candidate in computer science. Quote, if we capture these same vibrations using remote radars and bring in machine learning, here I changed it, it's not AI, it's machine learning, to help us learn what is being said using context cues, we can determine whole conversations. By understanding what is possible, we can help the public be aware of the potential risks. The team used a millimeter wave radar sensor, the same technology employed by self-driving cars, motion detectors, and 5G wireless networks to measure the tiny surface vibrations generated by speech played through a phone earpiece. To interpret this noisy and low-quality data, they adapted Whisper, an open-source AI speech recognition model developed for clean audio using a low-rank adaption machine learning technique. This method allowed them to retrain just 1% of Whisper's parameters specifically for radar data, improving transcription results without rebuilding the entire model from scratch. Radar tech throughput. The experiment setup involving positioning the radar sensor about 3 meters or 10 feet away from the phone to capture the minute vibrations. The data was then fed into a customized AI model, which produced transcriptions with around 60% accuracy over a vocabulary of over 10,000 words. While this is far from perfect, the researchers noted that even partial keyword matches could have serious security implications. The result was transcriptions of conversations with the expectations of some errors, which was a marked improvement from our 2022 version, with outputs only a few words, said co-author Mahanath Gowda, associate professor of computer science and engineering. But even picking up partial patches from speech, such as keywords, are useful in security contexts. The team compared their approach to lip reading with a typical capture of only 30 to 40% of the spoken words, but can still help people infer conversations when combined with context. Similarly, the radar AI system output, though imperfect, can reveal sensitive information when supplemented with prior knowledge of manual correction. Bazak emphasized the potential privacy risk posed by this emerging technology. Quote, similarly to how lip readers can use limited information to interpret conversations, the output of our model combined with the contextual information can allow us to infer parts of the phone conversation from a few meters away. I'd like to add, remember I did the report and it's in the news. It's nothing they just found just recently. I think some intelligence agency, they were able to read the vibrations off of glass using laser. This is not really a new idea. I just find it fascinating and that we're walking into, I guess, through this Illinois issue and the mental health and the need for more data and what these people are focusing in on to gather that data from your phones, from your earpieces, from whatever devices that are out there. This is just another imposition placed upon us, and we need to know these types of ideas are there. And also for those of us that might be higher security minded, it's almost as if, and I think I talked about this before, there's really no air gapping. There's no disconnection if they can reach in and touch you, right? Like they can use your routers to, or your router to figure out your proximity relative to a space. So all these technologies, well, I think they're kind of neat that they even look at this and how they figure this out. It's pretty cool stuff. What they're applying it to, they say they were going to tell, like, we know the threat. Well, most people don't care about the threat. It's in today, your ears today, it's gone out of your mind tomorrow, maybe some thought down another week from now, and then it's gone. And even if you get in some trouble because someone's making stuff up, as we found, AI gets it wrong, makes the wrong file, they hit you with something, you won't remember this stuff. You won't remember to go after it. The goal of our work is to explore whether these tools could potentially be used by bad actors to eavesdrop on phone conversations from a distance. But isn't that just not much different than dual use? Isn't that just weaponization of something under the pretense that we're going to help you out in case someone else does it? Just like the great Kobe swindle, just like Title 50 speaks. You can't do this except. You can't do this, the bioweapon, you can't do the radiological weapon, you can't do these weapons at all, unless. And that was where that dual use pops up. Doesn't it sound just like that here? Our findings suggest that this is a technically feasible under certain conditions, and we hope this raises public awareness to people so people can be mindful during sensitive calls. Like, I don't know what you're going to do about this one. You just got to put yourself in a dark area, I guess, and hope no one can see you. This is the other aspect about this mind programming. I have to concern myself. I keep talking about all this stuff. It's you have no place to hide type mentality. It starts wearing on us. Whether we want to be tough or not, it's in our psyche about how this works. And it's not that it doesn't work. That's the problem. It does and it can work. Most of us are not going to be targets. Most of us are not in places that this will work. But we never know when that might happen. We never know when something might be interesting for someone to set up against us. It may not even be us. We just happen to be an anonymous target to them. Our findings suggest this is technically feasible. Yeah, this is not even a new idea in a way. It's what they're applying it to. And then at the time, why? Not about the AI at this point. It's that they're looking at this and you're finding out we're vulnerable. All our technology is vulnerable. And there's people out there interested to make us vulnerable, to exploit us. The U.S. National Science Foundation supported the research, and the team stressed that their experiments are intended to highlight possible vulnerabilities before malicious actors exploit them. They envision future efforts to develop protective measures to secure personal conversations from this kind of remote surveillance. Maybe 1,000 or 100,000 different ways that they can surveil us now. The technology, I think, is designed to be able to do that anyway. But we move from AI-powered now surveillance into constitutionally powered. And I read this headline, as we'll get to. Trump takes over U.S. Capitol Police Force, deploys National Guard in effort to restore law and order. And that will be coming up in an article in a moment. But my thought as I saw that was in these post-founding father Lincolnized United States consistent with Lincoln's usurpation, the right behind the civil order to keep the natives from noticing any changes in the military command regime modeled for us to see, such that Section 704 of the District of Columbia Home Rule Act, also known as a D.C., remember, District of Columbia, district, not a state, is very critical to start listening for you in this next set of stuff, and the law and order, and who has it and who don't, and how do you know? Also known as DC, the Self-Government and Governmental Reorganization Act of 1973 gives the president the authority to take control of the DC Metropolitan Police Department. That, quote, whenever the President of the United States determines that the special conditions of an emergency nature exist which require the use of Metropolitan Police Force for federal purposes, he may direct the mayor to provide him, and the mayor shall provide, such services of the Metropolitan Police Force as the President may deem necessary and appropriate. So listen for all the conditional words there, but listen to the power that can be shifted. And listen to, again, shall is not a must. It's an imperative. Shall, you shall, no exception. Unless the order is not valid. But let me tie this back into what Trump just pressed on and got from NVIDIA and from AMD. When Trump wanted to run it a different way, all of a sudden the extortion got coughed up, didn't it? From those that can afford it, apparently. What about when they come after you and you can't? And that Lincolnized here condition that Trump is intending to use the military National Guard in doing this as well, and that under military rule, rights can be disappeared, as Trump is so fond of doing with due process, as I've reported week after week. And that with the great Covey swindle, the governors needed a lawful exigency to invoke emergency powers. My question, what are these federal purposes available to Trump, or what has been invoked? Because part of keeping the republic is recognizing if or when the public officials aren't themselves keeping the republic or following the laws or even making war on the laws of the United States. You know, making war on the laws of the United States is the long form for definition of what the word treason is. Making war on the laws of the United States. I've talked about this in our lawsuit back in 2013 against the Oregon government and the Bar Association and all that. This is what they have done. We went through the sustainable development overthrow. This is a little bit different. And there is a written document that gives these powers over, but we see Trump wants to deny due process. That's essentially where it's required. And that's making war on the laws of the United States. And so I'm very interested in this power. This is a very serious thing that's going down. And remember, as they did, and the military was involved as well, during the great Covey swindle, when we the people didn't stop their overthrow at warp speed. And remember that Trump is back with all that history. My thoughts as I'm looking at this title, in double checking, I wanted to know what are the federal purposes intended in the phrase the use of the Metropolitan Police Force for federal purposes. So I put that question into a DuckDuckGo browser, which incorporates an AI assistant. And for a thumbnail answer is all I was looking at to familiarize myself with the authority. And that AI, which I understand it can be error-prone, and so I've got to do some potential checking, but I wanted a quick response while I'm reading an article to make sense of the situation. And it returned that the phrase federal purposes refers to the authority granted to the president to utilize the Metropolitan Police Force for actions deemed necessary to maintain federal law and order, especially during emergencies. This can include addressing significant crime issues or civil unrest that may require federal intervention. Understanding federal purposes in the context of D.C. police control definition of federal purposes. The term federal purposes refers to actions or operations the federal government deems necessary for maintaining order, safety, or security within a jurisdiction. In the context of the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C., this can include law enforcement addressing crime and maintaining public safety, emergency response, managing situations that require immediate federal intervention, such as riots or large-scale protests, national security, protecting federal properties and personnel, especially in the Capitol. And remember, we just saw Trump do that in California, this very last one here. The legal framework relative to this, the authority to use the Metropolitan Police for federal purposes is derived from Section 740 of the D.C. Home Rule Act. This section allows the president to invoke federal control over local law enforcement under special circumstances, particularly during emergencies. Implications of federal control, we have the military involvement. The deployment of National Guard troops indicates a shift towards a more militarized approach to law enforcement. Let me remind you of the Lincolnization. And I would say maybe not such a shift other than perspective, what they're allowing us to see oversight and accountability, federal control may limit local governance and oversight, raising concerns about civil rights and community representation. I would have to extend that from civil rights to go to civil liberties, because civil rights is defined as your enjoyment of extortion in the form of taxes and pains and punishments. You're going to get those. Yeah, go read Title 42, Section 1981. That's the municipal law of D.C. So, I would say civil liberties will be diminished if they need it. And this is where you have to start understanding why I keep referring to this. Remind yourself it's a district, not a state. The federal control over D.C.'s police is temporary, lasting 30 days unless extended by Congress. This limitation emphasizes the need for a clear justification for such federal intervention. It's nothing more than I pointed out to y'all about the great Kobe swindle and how that all failed. They needed to have a justification, and that was the non-fraudulent demonstration of an infectious agent in a principle. And they were looking to control that infectious principle, the man or woman or the child that had it. So, same rule, same thing, same emergency, right? And that answer I read sounds fair enough as you read through it, as relative to this thing. I think I can grasp what's going on. So now I'm going to go read that article. And I want to apply, if I read in the article, the representation of what went on by some reporter, whether or not these requirements have been met. Again, I've got a question. Why is Trump so bent on taking out due process all the time? And I've told you, part of the problem is, remember, in the other article, it's this social commerce that's actually has got this American characteristic. It's fascism. And the one thing they want to do there is take away property, sustainability. They want to take away property. Why? Because they don't need to give you due process or compensation either. Well, I'm keen on this due process, at least from that standpoint. So how is Trump describing things becomes very important. And might this be a precursor to re-Lincolnization of direct military control, which might accelerate the diminishment, if not eliminate, rights? In particular, because Jeanine Pirro, I think her name is, Trump's new small-screen celebrity D.C. prosecutor, just came out to say she is going to attack anyone she feels is promoting anti-Semitism, which has been weaponized to mean condemning genocide of Palestinians. And as the U.K. government can weaponize all speech, and everyone can be made into the homegrown for Trump's stated deportation purposes, he claims. It's becoming a very serious question I'm looking at really fast here. What is this D.C. action really about? What's being developed? What's being tested? What's being exposed? What's going to be the precedent on this? Trump takes over U.S. Capitol's police force, deploys National Guard in effort to restore law and order. Trump and officials announced takeover of D.C. law enforcement. U.S. President Trump announced in a press conference on Monday, August 11th, that he will deploy the National Guard in the United States Capitol, Washington, D.C., and take over the city's police force in an effort to reduce crime. There's one of the reasons right there. We've got to wonder, is it? But there it is. He had to say that it was crime. It's got out of hand, apparently. The local municipal police can't keep up. But they're going to do it Trump's way is another writing problem on this. Quote, caravans of masked youth rampage through city streets all the times of the day, Trump claimed, and added that he would be getting rid of the slums where they live without specifying precisely which slums he was referring to. This property developer now. What happened to property rights? Well, I guess if you don't have any property, he don't have to give you due process or compensation either, right? See how smooth this is? We will bring in the military if needed, Trump said, also naming Baltimore, Chicago, Oakland, and New York as targets for the deployment of federal forces. Let me interject, if it doesn't come up, or not. I don't remember the few tabs about this. Almost every agency is doing this. They're actually going through the streets, talking to people, harassing them on their stoops. as they're doing whatever they're doing. It's pretty interesting to watch. And there's one of the reports here will tell you about that. You think you have rights? Not in D.C. It's a whole different setup there. I said it's not a state. The Trump administration issued an executive order on the same day declaring a crime emergency in the nation's capital. The order puts D.C. police under federal control and states that the Attorney General shall regularly update the President on the status of the special conditions of an emergency nature that exists in District of Columbia that require the use of the Metropolitan Police Force for federal purposes. The deployment of 800 National Guard troops to handle law enforcement in D.C. means a military chain of command is now involved in public safety decisions. And I'm going to highlight right there now. I want you to go look at any police department in this country and you tell me whether or not they have a military style chain of command, a timing structure. I've been through this before. Look very carefully at how they're describing this and then apply it around you. And the Lincolnized America, the United States, the America that we thought it was, and the military usurpation that you saw, I read the documents, they never got rid of it, will insist that the civil order make sure it makes no mistakes to expose the fact. And you will be looking right at a civil functioning system, and you won't know that it's actually under military control until they need to make it so. And here we're seeing that. We're actually seeing this play out right now. A military chain of command is already actually in your government running all your so-called civil non-occupied places. If you look very carefully, it's all over how they do this. According to sources reported by the New York Times, Trump also plans to deploy 150 FBI agents for nighttime patrols in the city. This has raised the alarm of some civil rights advocates. Quote, Donald Trump has created the fiction of an emergency to turn the nation's capital into a prototype of a police state. This is intended as a model application. Where we heard all of this stuff before, as I've talked behind the woodshed. I mean, it's everywhere. And we got back to the model application. We get back to creating a fiction. What was the great Covey swindle? I told you that was a model. I said the military is going to be behind that. It was. It has been. This is a model. They're just replaying it over and over and over. So this is a very interesting story, at least interesting to me a bit, that it's playing out. No one really sees it, it seems. Oh, we're kind of uppity about the fact that the military is being involved, the agencies being taken over. But no, there's an actual thing going on underneath this that's been working the whole time that no one sees. When this thing goes away, you'll think it went away. If it goes away now, I mean, they're getting so bold, it's pretty interesting. This is intended as a model application. No American city is safe from being placed under federalized militarized rule, says constitutional rights litigator Mara Vandenhuizen Hilliard. The executive director of Partnership of Civil Justice Fund. And well, at any rate, it's already there if you know what you're looking for. It's under the skin of the civil order. You think the civil order is orderly. You think it's normal. It's a skin over the top of another type of a system. Quote, this is the first step of Trump's march to militarize America's cities and destroy and subvert democracy. Well, democracy is a weapon. We're going to throw that. It's not the first time that Trump's marched at warped speed against, in a militarized way, against the American people. No American city, no American county, no American health system stopped him. And they had every power to be able to. D.C. officials denounced the hyperbolic and false statements on crime. So they're here. He got him saying what he's supposed to say. Oh, it's about crime, emergency on crime. Well, do we have it? We have to go look. No different than the great Covey swindle. Again, I hope you appreciate the model that I picked up with the great Covey swindle would be that we'd be working emergencies forward that we can use, go back to the great Covey swindle and say, well, how did they fail there? They're failing here. Where were the checks and balances? What was the test? Someone saying, wait a minute. We don't have an infectious agent. Adapted to this. Crime. Crime in D.C. has gone down recently, according to police data. Even in the first half of 2025, the crime overall has decreased by 7%, continuing on downward trend since 2023. Isn't that interesting? After the great Covey swindle as well. In January of this year, the Office of United States Attorney for the District of Columbia announced that according to the Metropolitan Police Department's data, total violent crime in D.C. dropped 35% in 2024 compared to 2023, reaching its lowest level in more than three decades. And I just, my thought right there, is the great Covey swindle killing that many people off? I don't know. That's what comes to my mind. But crime, they're saying, is falling precipitously since then. The strategy of this office began to employ shortly after I came into this role has been to work with our law enforcement partners to focus on the drivers of violence. Those gangs of crews of people who are dealing drugs, protecting turf, committing carjackings and other robberies, all while armed, then U.S. Attorney Matthew M. Graves, a Biden appointee, said at the time. Quote, it takes time to develop these investigations and prosecutions, but this is the fruit of that labor, a reduction in violent crime that D.C. is now seeing 5 years after federal forces took over Lafayette Square. And so someone says, au contraire, there's not higher crime, there's actually less. What's Trump doing? And this becomes the big question now. What is Trump doing with a model application across America that I cannot see any different than what he's already done in Trump 1 with the great Covey swindle? And other thing, it's not the only one. That just seems to be the easiest one. I put so much time into describing this and discussing it over the last 5, 6, 7 years, whatever. I've just got to stick with that example. It's too clear. It was too simple to see what's now developing. And Trump is doing it. Make America great again. Yeah, right. And then this report, speaking more to the law and even what this may be more about than my interest, and Kanukistan may be displaced in order to destroy the Republic forever. What to know about D.C. Home Rule Act as Trump puts D.C. police under federal control? President Donald Trump announced Monday that he's putting Washington, D.C. police under direct federal control, invoking Section 740 of D.C.'s Home Rule Act, which deals with the control of the city's police force. Well, we're taking it back. Under the authorities vested in me as the President of the United States, I'm officially invoking Section 740 of the District of Columbia Home Rule Act. You know what that is, placing the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department under direct federal control, Trump said. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser has not yet publicly commented on Trump's announcement. ABC News has reached out to Bowser as well as the Metropolitan Police for a comment. What I understand now the comment is that she will go so far, he can do that, but she is actually in charge. They are taking over only in control, but she's the implementer. So that's where they're trying to make the line, if there is one to be made. I'm not really actually interested in all that more than what's this model they're getting ready to execute that I think they've already done it. Now they're just going to focus in. They couldn't hit a state right off the bat. They're going to develop the precepts for this possibly, or they'll convince the governors to start doing it. And is another emergency coming? As I said, once they get the plan and the model laid out, they can just start hitting us with lots of different types of things. D.C.'s Home Rule Act of 1973 allows D.C. residents, to elect a mayor. Understand how it's working now? They couldn't do this without this act in 1973. Allows D.C. residents to elect a mayor, members of a D.C. council, and advisory neighborhood commissioners. The act, quote, is the result of the ongoing push by district residents to control their own affairs, their own local affairs, according to D.C. council. Consider this. What was happening without it? Very much what your mind is saying. It's not a state. Still under the act, there is a congressional oversight. Congress reviews all legislation passed the D.C. City Council before it can become law and has authority over D.C.'s budget. Additionally, the president appoints D.C. judges, and D.C. has no voting representation in Congress. Section 740 of the Home Rule Act gives the president the ability to use D.C. Metropolitan Police for federal purposes. It's in quotes now. That's the term. That's what I was interested in. What are those federal purposes, actually? No, I didn't do such a deep dive. I just wanted to generally, and to see if we can just qualify that at that level. And we can, except we can if we just let it ride on what President Trump said, but not if we go to challenge it, like I suggested had to happen with the great Covey swindle. Well, they can claim there's an emergency. They can claim there's something out there, but did they non-fraudulently demonstrate it? The federal purposes that the president may deem it necessary and appropriate. On Monday, Trump said Attorney General Pam Bondi is taking command of D.C.'s police force. Now, that's not what I read earlier, even in the thumbnail, was it? Is that what you heard? So we're already having a problem, and this is what the recent response by Bowser was, that she was actually going to be running it. Section 740 of the D.C. Home Rule Act does have some limitations. The emergency control will expire in 30 days unless the Senate and the House enact into law a joint resolution to extend it. Asked about the 30-day time frame, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, Jeannie Pirro, said that the president has sent a real clear message about the direction he wants to take D.C. Again, the president wants to take D.C. It's what he decides. It's what he decided for NVIDIA. They paid the extortion. Now they get to go do something. It's what he decides anybody in the world relative to tariffs. It's really not what he decides, though, when you think about it. Unless you're dealing, in this case, in the fascism for the corporations, or a tyranny, a dictatorship. And we can see that directly because D.C. is not a state. So he's going to take command. This is the kind of guy he is. I don't necessarily like it at all. And we have now a contention. I've seen there's lots of crime. Hey, but what about Seth Rich? Why don't we go back down that? Solve Seth Rich. Jeannie, please. Pam Bondi, solve Seth Rich. You want to talk about some interesting things? Why don't we solve that one while we're at it? That wasn't the so-called gang in the streets. No, that was a white-collar crime looking like it was coming out of the Democrats' party, wasn't it? Why isn't anybody going after that? That type of crime. Anyway, I think at the end of 30 days, he will make the right decision as to what he's going to do at the point going forward. Trump has long threatened to take control of D.C., saying he wants to crack down on violent crime in the district, although police statistics show that in the past 2 years, violent crime in Washington, D.C. has dramatically fallen. This is BTW RLM 641. There are more than 700,000 D.C. residents, and they are worthy and capable of governing themselves, Norton said on a statement Monday. The ultimate solution to ensure D.C. has control of its own resources is passage of my D.C. statehood bill, which would provide D.C. the same protections the state enjoy. Now we see the shift of what maybe is the driver right here. She says that the move has helped justify the need to pass legislation she has repeatedly reintroduced to establish statehood in the District of Columbia. As I said, your constitution, that may be adjustable, isn't it? And there's provisions for it. Don't think any of that stuff is going to be stable. So, Kanukistan, you may be booted out. You may not be the 51st, it looks like, as we're seeing this and what might be going on and what Trump might be doing. He allows this to come on in. It becomes favorable to do so because the tyranny is too obvious, too big a club for people to swallow. Democrat Senator Chris Murphy said in a post on X that Trump's decision to take over D.C. police isn't about public safety and is another attempt to distract from Trump's corruption and suppress dissent. And that's a possibility. In a post on X, Democratic Senator Tina Smith wrote, "What the heck is in those files?" A reference to the Epstein files accompanied by a video of Trump in a briefing room for his announcement. Republicans have lauded the announcement, claiming that Trump is making D.C. safe again. President Trump is right. We can't allow crime to destroy our nation's capital. Every American should be able to visit and enjoy D.C. without fear. Now, see how easy they jump between United States citizen and American? You want to be American, be proud and patriotic. They throw in the word American. It has nothing to do with Americans. Essentially, you are D.C. residents that have migrated. House Republicans support the effort to clean up Washington. Well, who wouldn't clean up such a bad situation if it is? End the crime wave and restore the beauty of the greatest capital in the world. Well, I don't know about that, but about the crime, because that's the only thing that was a federal purpose that I read that was in what they're talking about. Yeah, you want to drop your crime. but apparently there's a big contention. And it most might be that Trump actually solved it when he hit us with the great Kobe swindle at warp speed. 35% drop since then. How do you figure that out? How many people are dying out there? D.C., 700,000 people out of that 35% drop of crime, whatever that crime rate was. Pretty fascinating. And the federal militarization plans begin to be drawn up relative to that. Again, it's a model. DOD mulls quick reaction force for civil unrest. Did they say limited to D.C.? No. And so here you have it. Here you have the issue, the example, the make the cause, they set up the cause for what they're going to do, and they're going to set up and create the solution now based in that, and they'll turn it out as a model outwardly. The Trump administration is weighing a proposal to create a domestic civil disturbance quick reaction force, a new rapid response unit of 600 National Guard members who would be deployed within an hour to U.S. cities during civil unrest, according to the Pentagon Department's seen by the Washington Post. Well, that was fast, right to the Pentagon now, right? For U.S. cities. And he mentioned New York and Chicago and Oakland. The proposed force would be split between bases in Alabama and Arizona, with each group covering either side of the Mississippi River. If green lit, the plan's cost could reach hundreds of millions of dollars, especially if military aircraft and crews are kept on ready 24/7. And here we have, what, did Doge save that much money that he's going to spend it on this as well? Is, again, nothing makes sense with this guy. But what does make sense is this perpetual need to control on an expanding level. Going to be his way or the highway, apparently. Using commercial airlines would be cheap and cheaper than documents note. The proposal marks a significant shift in how the military might be used domestically and would rely on legal provisions allowing the president to bypass certain restrictions on domestic use of the military. It remains unclear if the plan has been seen by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. Pentagon officials declined to comment. While the National Guard routinely maintains fast response teams for emergencies within their home states, this plan would involve moving troops across state lines, something typically requiring the okay from governors. Well, they sure got that during the great Kobe swindle, didn't they? Everybody signed on, didn't they? Not a stop. I hope you're seeing the model. I hope you're seeing how easy it is to make it work. And remember, Trump is only going to be here for 3 more years. Vox notes that the last time a president deployed National Guard troops against state governors' wishes was in 1965 when Lyndon Johnson sent troops into Alabama. As Mossad compromises, he was too. The Guard tested a similar concept ahead of the 2020 election, putting troops on alert following summer of nationwide protests. Trump just summoned the Guard to the streets of Washington, D.C. Ongoing. Never changes, it seems. Trump wants to take over some U.S. cities. It's unlikely, but he can make life hard for them. And isn't that just part of the plan of how he works? That's his modus operandi. It just makes it hard on you till you just want to give in. Unless you're big enough to say no. The president has threatened New York City with takeover if Mamdani becomes mayor. U.S. President Donald Trump is squaring off against American cities. Now he's squaring off against American cities. And in the last few weeks, he's implied that he would use the powers of the presidency in order to have federal takeover of New York City and Washington, D.C. Well, apparently he's just done the Metropolitan Police all by itself, and that law allowed it, and that may be how that's going to work. Spurred by his efforts to crack down on immigration, any federal need, as he says so, remember that law, it's a pretty sweeping authority he's got. Crackdown on immigration and what he characterizes as high crime rates in urban areas, Trump's ongoing feud with several major U.S. cities has reached a boiling point in the recent weeks. But we're thinking about doing it, to be honest with you. We want a capital that's run flawlessly, he said at Washington, D.C. during the cabinet meeting a few weeks ago. His threats have also extended to New York City, especially in reference to mayoral candidate Zohran Mamdani a self-described socialist and rising star in the Democrat Party, whom Trump says would be a disaster if elected mayor in the country's biggest metropolis. And he says he's socialist, but do you look at what his policies are, it's really not that at all. Again, everybody seems to be making, all these officials, I don't care who it is, making decisions to bring the future that they want. And they use all this chaos and turmoil in order to keep us focused on things that aren't important in some regard, and how they're molding and changing this place works, but to no outcry by anybody or any effectual outcry. Well, we're going to straighten out New York. Maybe we're going to have to straighten it out from Washington, the president said earlier this month. Does he have the power to do that? It really depends on what and where, Trump is referring to, according to experts who spoke to CBC News. But he could find ways to make life very difficult for city governments and their residents. But what are the limits of his power? The Supreme Court has been extraordinarily clear that the federal government can't commandeer parts of state government, said David Schleicher, a lawyer and professor of Yale Law University, who is an expert in state and city governments. Quote, this is that they can't tell state officials or local officials how to run the government, and so they can't take them over and make them do stuff. Now, again, how'd that work during the great Covey swindle? It was just a suggestion got him to do stuff. All violation of law, too. So what about what law and order? And I've made this question before. When you stop seeing law and order, what law and order? Well, they demanded of you. It's outlined in the United States Constitution, 10th Amendment, which delegates powers to the states that haven't been assigned to federal government. Within the amendment, the federal government is forbidden. You hear that, folks? Forbidden from directing state or city officials to work toward its own objectives. Tell me where that came into play during the great Covey swindle. Tell me. I did never see it. But it's there, right? It's there. But no one enforced it. If what Trump means is like remove the mayor or replace him with Rudy Giuliani or something, that's not something that's within his authority, said Schleicher. He could also threaten fiscal consequences through his own authority or the Congress's help, something he has done on several occasions to Chicago. Well, in the great Covey swindle, it was that big bribe, wasn't it? Just a big bribe. And then lots of places found out, oh, that was just a loan. Fancy that. New York City, in particular, is relying on the federal government for $7.4 billion U.S., in funding during the 2026 fiscal year. And don't underestimate, Trump is attacking the commerce centers in New York and Chicago, right? Both of those places. Those are globally connected as well. While I compared that dynamic to the Trump administration's ongoing conflicts with the major U.S. universities, including New York's own Columbia University, while the federal government doesn't control Columbia, it has use cuts to federal funding as leverage over the schools. I would expect that same kind of playbook to apply to New York City, but on a much bigger scale, said Wallach. D.C., more vulnerable to federal interference. Trump has similarly mused about taking over Washington, D.C., claiming that the area is riddled with crime. Data shows that the violent incidents were significantly down in 2024. But presidential power is a different story in the nation's capital. The District of Columbia being a federal district and not a state is much more vulnerable to meddling by the federal government and Congress. D.C. is managed under the Home Rule Act, a form of self-government that became law in 1973, but Congress reviews all legislation passed by the local council and has authority over the district's budget. And its residents don't have a voting representative in Congress. The president also appoints the district judges. They have rights in New York that we do not have in D.C., so we're in a much more precarious position, said Vanessa Batters Thompson, the executive director of D.C.'s Appleseed Center for Law and Justice. And I'm glad they mentioned this, Remember, Washington, D.C. is not a state. It's a federal district. And that city is a municipality. That's what your Title 42 is. Now, when I said residents and you're migrant residents, that's what I'm talking about. I keep saying you're subject to the municipal code of the federal government for taxation. Now, how is that possible when they just said a district is not a state? If you're in a state, you shouldn't be subject, but she is. Work that one through, please. Work that through. Hey, go look at your voter registration. And go look at what you is. Do I talk funny all of a sudden? Maybe not. D.C. has had many different government structures over the years, but she says, frankly, past federal management of the city has not worked very well, partly because it was difficult to balance federal power with local input. And while Trump has argued that for a federal takeover of D.C. to crack down on disorder, Batters-Thompson notes that the federal law enforcement already has a major presence in the city, from the FBI to Capitol Police to the Park Police, in addition to D.C.'s local police force. So much for the more police means less crime, right? So let's bring in the tyranny, I suppose. Maybe as some surmise, this D.C. takeover is preparation for all those arrests that they're talking about be made in the Russian hoax, right? To catch those wily Congress critters coming back in from recess. But that doesn't answer New York or Chicago, do it? But then again, that's the modus operandi of the Let Them Eat Chaos administration, isn't it? And right after the news that the peacemaker Trump agreed to send nukes to the psychopaths in the UK, because you're going to do it Trump's way, UK discloses a serious nuclear incident at Navy base. A serious nuclear incident occurred at a Navy base in Scotland earlier this year, the UK Ministry of Defense has admitted, prompting concerns over poor maintenance of Britain's nuclear weapons and a lack of transparency. The category A event, the most serious classification for nuclear site incidents, took place between January and April at HMNB Clyde in Faslane, which houses the Royal Navy submarines, including Vanguard-class vessels. I wonder where they got that name, Vanguard-class vessels. I wonder who invested in those. Vanguard-class vessels. Is there a BlackRock-class vessels, too? Armed with Trident nuclear missiles, such events carry actual or high potential for radioactive release to the environment. The ministry has refused to provide details, leaving it unclear whether radioactive material actually escaped. It's so much for so-called transparency. The request for NSER data followed the investigation last week that found radioactive water from warheads stored in Coalport had leaked into body of water called Loch Long on multiple occasions. The Scottish Environmental Protection Agency said leaks had been caused by bursts in aging pipes, with up to half of the site's 1,500 pipes past their design life. The watchdog blamed shortfalls in maintenance for the incidents. Shortfalls? With 1,500 pipes past their design life left to go? So much for IAE inspections, while they focused on the non-violating Iran who peace faker Trump bombed, right? And I've been saying things between Russia and the United States will happen at the speed of diplomacy. What I could find as of today in the Trump-Putin summit, the President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin did meet for nearly 3 hours in Anchorage, Alaska, but did not appear to reach an agreement on a ceasefire or ending the war in Ukraine. Putin, speaking for 8 minutes on the summit, told reporters that an agreement reached with Trump will, quote, pave the path toward peace in Ukraine, close quote. Like Trump, he did not offer specifics. Neither president took any questions from reporters. Trump followed with 3 minutes of post-meeting remarks, speaking to the reporters on stage. Trump called it a very productive meeting before adding that there is no deal until there's a deal, without providing any details. Trump said in his remarks that the U.S. and Russia haven't quite gotten there in the summit, but said he and Putin made some headway. There's no deal until there's a deal, Trump said. So at least Trump didn't said he ordered a couple of nuclear subs anywhere new this time. And except, as I said last episode, this summit would not determine anything about Ukraine if more than what was already discussed at all, as all those honest reports were indicating. All those dishonest ones were beating the drums. And as I mentioned last week as well, I think Putin benefited from this meeting directly to assuage the Russophobic rancor suggesting Russia is a pariah state. Putin also, or Russia, cannot be denied or made illegitimate, as some have been trying in this matter. So Trump also said a lot was agreed to, making great progress, but he did not elaborate, though he mentioned business, commerce, and economy, just as I reported it appeared was going to be done. So essentially nothing was unpredictable here, well, at least yet. There's always tomorrow, right, Trump? At any rate, we'll be able to see what's going on. I didn't think it was going to come out of much of this. It did surprise me it was only 3 hours if they were going to get something done. So this kind of ended pretty quickly, and that's telltale. I think that Trump got it directly from Putin, what he may not have understood, what I've been describing prior in episodes, what I think is not being told to Trump. I think Trump found out he's got more problems. He's got more things to work out. But since this was more of an economic financing, work together type thing, I think those things are probably a lot closer than the Ukraine issue. And things changing or not changing, this award for information leading to an arrest changed. And here's one of the things I might be able to credit the Trump administration for doing for me, and I'm glad I could help. U.S. increases reward for arrests of Venezuela's Maduro to $50 million. The United States has doubled its reward for information leading to the arrest of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro to $50 million, Mike dollars, over allegations of drug trafficking and links to criminal groups, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi announced on Thursday. In a video posted to X, Bondi accused Maduro was collaborating with prominent criminal groups such as Tren de Aragua and Sinaloa Cartel. Venezuelan Foreign Minister Juan Gil said on Telegram that the announcement was, quote, the most ridiculous smokescreen ever seen, close quote. While we're debunking the terrorist plots orchestrated from her country, this woman is coming out with the media circus to please the defeated far right in Venezuela, Gil said. The dignity of our homeland is not for sale. We repudiate this crude political propaganda operation, he added. The Venezuelan Information Ministry did not immediately respond to a request for comment. But I responded to the ex-Twitter post of the U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi to collect that $50 million reward on her offer by saying and posting to her, he's working at the Palacio de Miraflores, Caracas, the presidential palace. That's confirmed by AI, Attorney General Pam Bondi. Here's the map with the link I provided. If that reward offered is 50 mil fiat, I'll take it instead in gold coin. Thanks. And it didn't take long for DD Geopolitics to respond with a proof of my response to their post. President of Venezuela Nicolas Maduro reacts to $50 million bounty set on him by Department of State. Says, quote, come for me. I'll be waiting here at Miraflores. Don't take too long, cowards. And showing the video. But don't note, the video is a little bit tongue-in-cheek here. The video isn't actually a reply from Maduro to raising the reward, but something that he said recently. But I wasn't wrong about where to find Nicolas Maduro. And I don't know why the United States government is having such a difficult time locating and apprehending him at Miraflores. But I'm sure my gold coins from Pam Bondi, to me, is in the mail. They should arrive any time. And following the Wicked of Oz BTWRLM 639 episode report of the Netherlands Dutch Security Agency finding Israel is a threat to national security, Norway's $2 trillion tango dollars welfare fund divests Israeli investments over Gaza West Bank concerns. Following a review of its ties to the Israeli military, the arm of Norway's central bank said in recent days it has divested from 11 Israeli companies. Norway's $2 trillion sovereign wealth fund said it is terminating all contracts with asset managers handling its Israeli investments and has divested parts of its portfolio in the country over the situation in Gaza and the occupied West Bank. The announcement follows an urgent review last week following media reports that the fund had built a stake in an Israeli jet engine group that provides services to Israel's armed forces, including maintenance of fighter jets. The fund, an arm of Norway's central bank, which held stakes in 61 Israeli companies as of June 30th, in recent days divested of 11 of these, it said in a statement Monday. "We have now completely sold all of those positions," the fund said, adding that it continued to review Israeli companies for potential divestment. Norway's parliament in June rejected a proposal for the fund to divest from all companies with activities in the occupied Palestinian territories. And so we got a little bit of movement going on. The pressure is now coming. The excuses really must fall. And I was happy to see at least the governments are stepping up in some partial way to start to make a note of what's going on. And Trump, though, is on these points, proving himself to be a follower and not a leader. Whether relative to the Siberian Gulag or building back better, or as regards aiding and abetting the genocidal Zionist Federation movement posing as a state, Trump has followed Biden, who followed Obama, who followed Bush. As to these and other things, Trump is a follower, not a wise or righteous leader. And then we hear this: genocide in Gaza would have taken one afternoon, says Satan Yehu. Israel's PM has denied seeking to starve the Palestinian enclave despite heavy criticism from the UN. Speaking at a press conference on Monday, Satan Yehu scrambled to defend himself against heavy international criticism of Israel's campaign in Gaza, which many view as a deliberate attempt to starve the enclave into submission. He insisted that there hasn't been starvation in the area, describing the situation instead as a temporary shortage. Quote, "If we had wanted starvation, if that had been our policy, 2 million Gazans wouldn't be living today after 20 months. If we had wanted to commit genocide, we would have taken exactly one afternoon," he said. Ben Hitler von Satan Yehu just comes out to excuse the wickedness of his apartheid, ethnic cleansing, concentration camp, land theft, and evading the domestic criminal cases against him project, saying that if he intended a genocide, that could have been done in an afternoon. The problem for old Ben Hitler is genocide does not have a time element. And what BB the Barbarian has admitted to is how wickedly monstrous and sadistic this identity politics poser Ben Hitler Satan Yehu is in his intent to commit his own Holocaust and further to genocide, and while Trump and Congress and the other AIPAC and Mossad compromised Congress war criminals provide the means and encouragement, right, Donald, Gaza Casino and Kushner Water Theme Park Trump? And to decry this anti-Semitic people opposing the genocide of the Semitic people is a new low for mankind. Despicable wickedness. There's no amount of good that these people can do to save themselves from the special place in Hades I'm told exists for people of the world. And then, how weak that sounds that some of the billions of people with the power to stop this abomination haven't stepped up to stop them. That we have to rely on a promise for supreme justice and not provide it to ourselves when we can. But it's written, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness." I can read it, Isaiah 5:20. And light for darkness and darkness for light. And another apparent threat to national security: Ghislaine Maxwell cleared to leave prison a work release. Convicted child sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell has reportedly been cleared to leave prison on work release. Podcast host Allison Gill obtained information about Maxwell's security score, sex offender waiver, and other details after the former partner of Jeffrey Epstein was moved to a minimum security prison in Texas. According to the journalist Adam Classfield, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse raised questions about Maxwell's new prison accommodations in a letter to the director of the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Senator demanded to know if Maxwell received special treatment after meeting with Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, President Donald Trump's former personal attorney. Documents viewed by Gill indicate that Maxwell was given a 7-point base security score, the highest possible because she is a sex offender and considered a danger to the community. Quote, despite her score of 27, resulting in the minimum security level, BOP policy does not allow people with a sex offender PSF, public safety factor, to serve their sentences in minimum security facilities. Someone has to waive the PSF and to make that move, Gill noted. The documents also showed that Maxwell's custody level was set to out, allowing her to leave the prison to work. Gill explained that sex offender Epstein, Maxwell's associate, enjoyed the same ability to work outside prison after a sweetheart deal penned by attorney Alan Dershowitz and approved by Alex Acosta, who served under the former President George W. Bush and Trump. Just Us for the Israel First Administration is what I read about right there. Nigeria's data breach allegations expose risks of centralized digital ID systems. I'm bringing this all back, what Trump's been doing, what's bringing on, if people just look through all this and see what's coming on in his wake, on his command, on his tyranny. And we're seeing now the vulnerabilities that are coming through in other places, because this is a global reach as you read, getting through ICE and you get into these databases and the countries that are all making their essentially the same type of system. Interoperable, remember that phrase, for the infrastructure. Nigeria's data breach allegations expose risk of centralized digital ID systems. Again, I could do these reports on and on and on. I only do one or two as it seems important, as the imperative speaks to me through the different things that are going on and being used against us in a week by week. A single compromised login in Nigeria's national ID system could become a skeleton key to millions of lives. Centralized digital ID systems promise convenient and streamlined access to services, but when a single database becomes a gateway to a population's most sensitive details, the consequences of the breach can be devastating. Nigeria is now facing exactly that risk. Brave new world, that's all I can say. Brave new Siberian gulag world. Let's go back to the beginning of the broadcast where I was talking about the digital aspects of all this and all the rule, all the testing that's going on. Your mental health. How good is this going to be for your mental health? Wondering if the next moment your stuff's gone, been transferred, been blamed, you did something you didn't know you did, ripped somebody off. Allegations have emerged from that insiders at the National Identity Management Commission are selling citizens' personal information on the open market. The leaked material reportedly includes national identification numbers, bank verification numbers, and even photographs, data that can unlock both government services and bank accounts. And didn't I address the third-party apps like T that did the same thing? The National Data Protection Commission has launched an investigation warning the NIMC, or any agents found responsible, could face fines or up to $10 million or 2% of their annual revenue. This follows earlier enforcement actions that saw more than 100 registration partners terminated for extortion and other misconduct. What, like the ones that Trump just did to NVIDIA and AMD? They're willing to pay 15%? Evidence of the trade surfaced when a buyer demonstrated that 4 full sets of personnel records could be acquired online, pointing to an insider breach of the national identity database. The scale of the exposure is alarming, with over 122 million Nigerians already enrolled and the country recently shifting to the NIN Authority Digital Verification Platform, which centralizes identity checks nationwide. Welcome, Mexico. Nigeria's identity program is meant to provide secure authentication for public services and financial transactions, but its vulnerabilities have been laid bare. Not just Nigeria, I will say. Since 2011, the government has poured significant funds into the system, beginning with the $36 billion allocation for electronic ID cards and later securing $433 million from the World Bank backed grant in 2019 to register 148 million citizens by mid-2024. Registration is confiscation, I think we've heard, right, Grimner? Public concerns over data protection intensified in April 2024 when FIJ exposed Express Verify, a rogue website selling access to personal information for as little as 200 N per search. Centralized digital ID systems created a single all-or-nothing point of trust. Once that point is breached, the consequences spread far beyond the original leak because the same identifiers feed multiple systems, financial, governmental, even biometric verification. This design means one compromised access channel can silently open doors across an entire society. Unlike a credit card number, which can be replaced, identifiers like NIN are biometric templates, are permanent, locking citizens into a lifetime of exposure once stolen. Talk about being locked down. Remember what they were saying during the Kobe swindle and the lockdown. That's it right there, now 5 years on. What kind of databases are we talking about that Trump's supporting to bring on? All the infrastructure. ICE to buy eye-scanning tech that can identify migrants in seconds. Quote, enables law enforcement agencies across the country to positively identify individuals in seconds from virtually anywhere. And remember, relative to federal district jurisdiction, you are a migrant resident in the states. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, plans to use eye-scanning biometric systems according to new documents. Procurement documents published on Wednesday show that the agency is seeking to buy access to a service called IRIS, which describes itself as a national web-based iris biometric network. Newsweek contacted ICE outside normal working hours for more information via email. Why it matters. President Donald Trump's administration has intensified efforts to remove undocumented migrants in keeping with the president's hardline mass deportation policy. Did you hear homegrown there too? Did you hear homegrown policy? The White House has maintained that anyone residing in the United States illegally is a criminal. ICE has faced intense scrutiny over its conduct, becoming a focal point in the national immigration debate. The documents reflect federal agencies' increasing reliance on sophisticated biometric systems to verify identities in the field, with the technologies offering rapid verification capabilities to support enforcement and removal operations. And let me remind you, earlier I talked about Zuckerberg's glasses, and they're being used by ICE in a national database that actually goes international. Remember last episode talking about that? What to know? Newly released procurement documents showed that ICE was in the process of acquiring mobile iris scanning devices from B12 Technologies, a tech firm in Massachusetts. Its flagship products, the Mobile Offender Recognition and Information System and the Inmate Identification and Recognition System, are intended to help ICE Enforcement and Removal Operations Unit verify the identities of individuals in custody and those encountered during enforcement actions. Enforcement actions. What is that? And remember, the border extends 60 mile, 100 miles in and around every port, including airports, international airports. According to manufacturer material, the technology allows officers to authenticate identities within seconds and access criminal justice records from multiple jurisdictions once a person is enrolled in a national biometric database. According to B12, MORIS is compatible with iOS and Android phones. Once a subject's iris data is scanned, the technology cross-references more than 265 unique iris characteristics, including central registries such as the Sex Offender Registry, the Child Project, the Senior Safety Net, 404 Media reported, or whatever they want to add. So they get to look at your iris, right? Sam Altman, WorldCoin. According to B12, its systems can be used by law enforcement across the United States. This marks ICE's first recorded federal contract of B12 technologies. Previously, ICE used biometric tools such as Mobile Fortify facial recognition app, which leads agents to compare images and fingerprints as well against Department of Homeland Security databases. Another tool, EDDIE, allows officers to capture and process fingerprints in less than a minute in the field. What people are saying, B12 Technologies said on its website, B12 Technologies and the nation's sheriffs have created what no other organization in the world, public or private, have been able to accomplish, the implementation of the nation's only secure, encrypted, real-time national criminal justice data sharing network based on iris recognition technology, which enables law enforcement agencies across the country to positively identify individuals in seconds from virtually anywhere. Quote, the inmate identification and recognition system positively identifies offenders using the most anatomically unique biometric, the iris. But what if you all are an inmate as they build the walls to secure you? Sheriff's offices and correctional facilities have been utilizing iris biometric recognition technology for essential responsibilities such as arrest, inmate intake and booking, inmate release, and authentication of an individual. What does that have to do with ICE? But there you have it. The specific timeline for deployment of ICE's new mobile iris scanning tools has not been publicly disclosed. You see that, you hear the cage door closing on you, folks. And relative to anywhere and immigration and Interpol, new EU media freedom law allows a journalist's arrests if justified by public interest. The moving goalpost. So this all-important national security will apparently trump speech. A shield for reporters on paper, it hands government the pen to rewrite the rules. The European Union's European Media Freedom Act became binding law across all member states on August 8th, but behind its name lies a set of provisions that could restrict the very freedoms it claims to safeguard. Alongside language about protecting reporters, the regulation authorizes arrests, sanctions, and surveillance of journalists whenever authorities say it serves an overriding reason in the general interest. Ursula von der Leyen, president of the European Commission, hailed the legislation's arrival on social media, saying, quote, a free and independent press is an essential pillar of our democracy. With our European Media Freedom Act, we want to improve their protection. This allows journalists to continue their important work safely and without disruption or intimidation. Although the law outlines protections such as prohibiting spyware and coercion to expose sources, those assurances are undercut by built-in loopholes. Governments can bypass them if their actions are allowed under national or EU law and deemed proportionate to a vaguely defined general interest. That permission extends to intrusive and surveillance technologies in cases tied to crimes carrying a maximum prison term of 3 years or more, a list that ranges from terrorism and human trafficking to offenses labeled as racism and xenophobia, if you just connect up what Janine just said about anti-Semitics and what they're going to go after in the United States. The legislation also orders each country to maintain registers of media orders and addresses. It targets so-called disinformation, accusing some media outlets of manipulating the single market to spread falsehoods. Large online platforms are portrayed as choke points for access to the news, blamed for refueling polarization. To confront this, the EU wants tighter cooperation between national regulators and overseen by European Media Services Board, made up of member state regulators and commission representatives. Although labeled independent, the board's secretariat is run by the commission, giving it an inside track on the decision-making process. Another element of the act involves pushing trustworthy media and reinforcing state broadcasters through a transparent appointment process and stable public funding. Annual gatherings between EU officials, internet companies, media representatives, and NGOs are encouraged to assess how disinformation initiatives are being carried out. Despite being sold as a shield for press freedom, the structure of the act gives Brussels and national authorities the ability to decide which voices remain active and which can be silenced. By allowing arrests, surveillance, and tighter state involvement in the media landscape, it risks turning from a safeguard into a tool for control. And how people live with this deceit, I just don't understand. And understand here as well, as Trump orders corporations to function, and we see Rumble getting together with Truth Social, and Trump is involved in that, wanting to see how social media will function, and we realize that this broadcast and this network is being gone by Crumble, and it is doing Wall Street speak instead of free speak. We can see the iteration from here is already can be working into the United States, where they claim you have free speech, but it's not going to be on a platform. You can do it out in the street somewhere, but not in the digital realm. They don't want you. And so I guess I'll just ask some more. We need the donations to be coming in. It's been scant. Sound needs a lot more money to do more of the hardware. It's just ongoing what's going on and what to keep up with. He's doing the best that he can to figure out what we need and move it on. And as I was explaining, you have to be a place that isn't big, that they can identify. And the only way I know to do that is I've talked over with the guys in the past and moving this through, is that each one of you are really what the source is, and there's nobody that can add that up. And so this is the type of system that we're still continuing working on, and we're getting a little bit of support, but I don't think it's near enough what we should be getting. But with the content that we provide and do give people and the information that's going on and the integration that goes on, actually, with other subjects and the work essentially for sound, he's doing all that work on top of bringing the system together, curating content that brings together a confirming and consistent statement about the affairs of the world and what we might be doing since we're in the world and not of it, how we might be able to progress. So if you would donate as you can, and content providers, please step up as sound before a time slot. If you can do, again, commit to this situation, the endeavor here is going to be needed. The system is moving in lots and lots of ways faster than anybody, I think, can actually appreciate. And pretty soon, this network or this voice may be tapped or knocked down so far, you're not going to hear it, or will be disappeared, I guess. And one of the last things I think I want to go through is why Putin and Trump had to talk in person, but I don't want to get too much into this more because it's already happened. I think we'll maybe cover this maybe better more next broadcast, but let it suffice to say that the meeting did happen in Alaska, and that the meeting was only for 3 hours, as I reported, and it went the way I suggested it would, and I'm real glad we're not hearing more nuclear subs being put in place. But what I wanted to get into this time, because we're going to run out of time, is there's a background behind and a history behind which I don't think Trump was appreciative of. Why Putin and Trump had to talk in person. And I think we heard that a little bit in what Putin was saying when he got out, and he's talking about history. He's doing what he did to Tucker Carlson. He's understanding that Americans are kind of dumb. We really don't quite get the history and the importance it is to the Russians and the facts that are set up in the history of what's going on and the documented facts. It's not opinion. They're laying it out on the record that's being adulterated. Talk about misinformation. He's dealing with the global misinformation all the time, if you listen carefully. So I want to get to this maybe the next thing, but I wanted to put a little finer point on the fact that there was this giant promoted summit that only lasted 3 hours. To me, that's a little bit of a shock. I would have thought that when they said, when it went to a summit level, the presidents would meet, they had some real good agreements ready to go. And we didn't even hear the economic ones. And so what I'm wondering more, where I'm mentioning this and not really going to touch it quite yet, this history, I think, is a real problem. And I have a suspicion Trump found more of it out. And he found out how much trouble this is going to be in truth, in how he can't solve a thing. He's got no cards, folks. He's been proven that here. But we are missing, as Americans, as most people looking in, anybody who thinks derogatory on Russia. And I'm not saying I'm promoting a lot of it. They have problems in their nation as well. I mean, it's like a group of people that are going down their track like everybody does. We're not holding our end of the bargain as Americans either. And so I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there's a history that needs to go on. And why is this important? Because these are the two countries with two people that have the ability to destroy the world. And there's reports coming out, like I was saying all this time, we are so close to a nuclear war. And it's the reports are coming out behind the scenes. They're finally seeping out. We have been very close to that. And so this talking is very, very important. This dialogue, even if it doesn't go anywhere, is better than pushing the cherry red buttons. And so there's a history. I think Trump just looked at it. Looking at the picture I saw after the meeting, going to the podiums in front of the reporters, there's something it looked like he's troubled by, but he's still talking like they're working it out. And so I think he learned something that he hadn't been told. I got the suspicion. I don't know. Wasn't there, not going to be there, never going to be on the inside. But in trying to anticipate where we are and how close we are to these disasters, you're looking at a nation in the United States that foments wars. We're looking at Russia at this point trying to stop the one. Didn't want to get in the one that it's in, except for the United States causing it. And so there's a reckoning, I think, coming, and it's going to take some time, and Russia will make sure it's at the speed of diplomacy because they're coming on to a fulfillment of their project, which is that special operations. I think it's very important that we understand it. I think it's very important that we watch what's going on. We're watching history in the making, in the rebuilding of a relationship, even when it ends in continued animosity, because we're at two countries that there's some people in the United States, I don't know where it came from, I cannot even imagine it, that want to take Russia out. And there's people, I suppose, that are outside the United States that are part of that, that want to take Russia out. It's a very potentially wealthy place. It's a big place. And there's lots of people to control. There's lots of resources. Lots of people that are looking at money and control as the most important thing in their lives. They'll never have enough. And that's one of our problems. But history shows summits rarely change the world, but this one might prevent a disaster, was I was going to read. I think I'm going to cover this more in depth next episode. That's exactly what my thought was. I told you that. Trump is trying to go a different route. He's trying to take the egg off the face of the United States, and I think that's where this is going. But I think Trump learned a little bit of history, how this thing in Ukraine is going to be a little bit longer in the tooth before they can get that worked out. And there's so much pressure against solving it, is what Putin is up against. This has been BTW RLM 641. I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs are nature willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
Feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.